Hey, man, what are we talking about again?
Nothing yet.
All right, cool.
I mean, what's on the agenda? Now, come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up, y'all. N-E-R-D
up. N-E-R-D up. It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with...
Tim Coker.
Tim Mattson.
Isaac Wilson.
And here we got a special guest with us joining us. We've got Adolfo Dorta. Now, I got the name right, right?
You got it. You nailed it.
Okay. I worry about that sometimes. But Adolfo's marketing and promotions for the Days of the Dead convention. The next one is coming up June 30th through July 2nd. It's going to be in Indianapolis at the Wyndham Indianapolis West, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct. You got it.
All right. So that's going to be there, and I'm looking forward to this. It's just going to be actually, Adolfo, you're no stranger to the Nerd Up Podcast. You were here last year when you guys came through town.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct.
And so I guess we might as well make you a regular host. But anyway, so welcome to the podcast. Now, let's see here. First of all, I have just got to talk about this. The main guest you got coming in for this, before we go any further, George Romero. The king of zombies. I mean, the man that started the whole thing. You got him going to be there as a guest. Man, how's that? I mean, that's got to be an achievement, getting him to come up.
Yeah, it's awesome because we actually had him a few years ago. We did a show in February called Culture Shock, which was sort of our stab at a more pop culture oriented show. I mean, it was sort of like we just gave ourselves an excuse to book a lot of Star Wars guests and do more comic related stuff that we're really into, but that sometimes maybe the horror crowd might not be as receptive to. And that was a great show, but it was definitely a different crowd that showed up for that one. So we're happy to be bringing him back again. And I mean, I agree with you. I think he's definitely one of the guys that kicked off, you know, not just the zombie genre, but I think, he did so much for modern horror movies.
Yeah,
that his influence is incalculable. I mean, I one of my favorite movies of all time and one that kind of got me into the horror genre was Night of the Living Dead, and just watching that, up late at night on whatever channel they were showing it, and just kind of be so, like, you know, it was back then when, you know, you knew, or I mean, I was really young, but I was watching something that was both intriguing, but at the same time, very frightening at the same time. And, you know, I think that movie still holds up today, for being as old as it is. And it just goes to show what a master of his craft George Romero is.
The thing that hits me most about that, every time I watch it at least every Halloween, I try to slip it in, his use of shadow. I mean, and the thing is, they don't really ever show the zombies, you know, like they do in the sequels, you know, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, and all those others. They show lots of gore in those. This one, it's not as much gore, but it's more of the drama of surviving, kind of like Walking Dead is, but they show a lot of gore in that, too. Never mind.
It's very theatrical.
Yeah.
If you look at how it's done, where, like, you can almost see that. And I actually went to go see a stage play of Night of the Living Dead last Halloween.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just a small production in my town. But it was cool to see that and just kind of parlay it with the film and see, like, the comparisons in style, where, you know, Romero, like you said, he doesn't really show you a lot. You know, a lot of it is very segmented. It's left to the imagination.
Right.
It's more focused on the dramatic performances and the people in the film selling you the apocalypse that's happening that you never see.
Right, exactly.
It's really interesting because it's like, that's a movie that I remember seeing it for the first time when I was probably, I don't know, 14. You know, this would have been like 1982. And, you know, it was during these, I don't know, one of those like all-night horror movie marathons they would do on, I think it was Spotlight, it was the cable channel back then. And, you know, I remember like I was seeing a lot of horror movies for the first time and early 80s stuff like the Halloweens and things like that. And I remember when Night of the Living Dead came on, I think partly because it was black and white, but it felt like the real deal. And I don't mean that it felt like it was really happening, although it kind of had a little bit of that documentary feel, but there was just something like it's like you're talking about, the seriousness of it and the way that it really delves into the characters and what it's like for them. You know, it's before all of this was codified into a trend. know, that has since been repeated and enlarged on. And there's something to be said for that motherlode, you know. Although Romero's returned to the genre, and he's great. I mean, Day of the Dead is great. Dawn of the Dead is great.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Diary of the Dead.
There's Island of the Dead. I mean, they just went on with, I don't know if he had anything to do with that one, but he started this whole zombie genre. Well, okay, maybe not started it, but at least got it to where it's, hey, this is something we can do. This is something that's awesome. People are going to love this. And here we are now. And hey, you're going to get your chance to meet the man at Days of the Dead, the convention in Indianapolis. I'm telling you, well, I'll tell you once again, the dates, June 30th through July 2nd. Yeah, I just had to first start out right off the bat with George Romero because, a classic right there. So that's going to be fun. Meet him. You're even doing a photo op with him. What's going to be up with the photo op?
George will do photos at his table, but, you know, we just thought that, just something a little bit where it's not so over the table. It's a little bit more professionally lit. The guy we do photos with, he's, you know, we resisted the whole photo op trend for a while just because, and this isn't throwing shade at anybody else, but I'm not a fan of like the really blown out lighting of the, like the Sears portrait studio type photo ops you see a lot. And I know a lot of people are big fans of those and I've even had, you know, fans tell me that they would like ours to look more like that. But I just, you know, we have a professional photographer in Jason Schaefer who, I mean, he's been doing it for 20 years. He does a lot of like food photography and stuff for like, you know, big companies and he's in, you know, art galleries all over the country. But, you know, I don't know exactly, you know, how he's going to choose to do that. But I know for photo ops in the past, he's always very good with the lighting. And I'm sure he'll come up with something real moody and appropriate for George Romero.
But we're also going to have a vendor.
You know what? Like, ideally, I think that'd be awesome. I don't know if the fans would go for that. But, I mean, I'll probably tell him to do mine in black and white.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be great. But we're also going to have a vendor there called Creatures of the Night that's going to be doing some zombie makeup for people either want to go in donning the Robin's Egg blue of Dawn of the Dead or a more black and white kind of look from Night. So, you know, that'll be fun if somebody wants to, take it a little extra step further, go and do themselves up with those guys and take a picture with Romero.
I think that'd be awesome too. Either way, and that in black and white. I'll do that one in black and white too. You got some ideas there. Now you're going to also have a couple other photo ops. Let's talk about those. C.J. Graham and Steve Dash. Both of those guys played Jason in Friday the 13th. One of them is the burlap bag Jason. I guess that's Steve Dash from what was that, part two?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, because Jason didn't have that hockey mask till later. In fact, he wouldn't even
not till the third one.
Yeah. And so the burlap bag, I just that look is just so, I don't know, cool. In fact, I've got it's weird. I've got a vinyl mat rubber mask of the burlap bag. It's weird, but it works. But anyway,
that's actually my favorite, to be honest.
Is that right?
Yeah, I just, you know, I like hockey mask Jason, but that burlap sack, something about like that one little eye hole, peering at you is creepy to me. And it's all. I mean, part two is my favorite film of the series, but just something about like this weird, like backwoods, you know, maniac kind of Jason just wearing a dirty burlap sack over his head is just, I don't know. It's creepy to me.
You're absolutely right. That one eye hole is what. Yeah, exactly. Get you. Now, those guys, they're going to be in costume doing their photo op or the ability to do that on one of the dice. When they're in costume, are you going to stage it? I mean, I've been to places or other cons where they have a fully staged, like, well, just for example, Mads Mikkelsen from Hannibal, one of the cons I went to about 5 years ago, he was there and they had a table set up and you were the meal and he was standing over you. It's really elaborate setup. Are they going to do anything like that for the Jason ones or just going to be in costume or?
Oh, we did one with CJ in Atlanta where it was just in costume, and we kind of talked about it afterwards, and so we came up with the idea where he wanted to maybe have like some branches or something kind of coming into the photo op. So what we're likely going to end up doing is have like a background that we could shade to where the color doesn't look weird, but that with the right lighting would look like you're almost in the woods.
Yeah.
And then just kind of have like the foliage coming in, you know, from the sides. And I think it's, you know, like I said, I have 100% confidence in in Jason, and he's always made the photo ops look absolutely phenomenal. But, you know, in regards to the costumes, I mean, I've seen the CJ Graham one, and I've seen parts of the Steve Dash one, which is being designed by Bryce Horror out of Atlanta, Georgia, who does a lot of our sort of stage dressing and stuff like that for our panels. And you're stepping into the film with Jason. It's nice. Uncanny how close to resembling the stuff that you see in the film they've managed to make these costumes look. And CJ, I mean, he hams it up. He doesn't talk. He stays in character. You know, he's got a variety of different weapons that he brings to the table to, you know, kill you in however many different ways, you know, you'd like. But definitely a very cool opportunity for the fans.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be offering it alone to where you could either just do CJ or just do Steve, or both of them together, which I think is pretty cool, too.
I think that's really – that would be awesome. Me right in the middle between two Jasons, I think – you know, I'm loving this. Now, let's talk about some of the other guests you got coming up. I'm going to save a group of them for the last part because we talked about this last year, but I want to bring it up again. But first, I want to go through some of the other celebrities that are going to be coming up. First, we've got Matthew Lillard from Scream and also Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's Shaggy. But anyway, he's going to be there, and that ought to be kind of fun. But another one grabbed my attention. Dee Snider.
Yes.
The Twisted Sister. He did that movie Strangeland, which was a strange movie and a nice horror. But Dee Snider, Twisted Sister. I saw him in concert when I was 16 years old. Now we're both old. So, and he's moved on with his life and actually done a lot of other things besides Twisted Sister. So, you got that. And then the other one, here's the one I really wanted to bring up. This one grabbed my attention when you guys first announced this. I don't even remember so many months ago. But I'm going to mess up these names, I know. But Haruo Nakajima and Tsutomu Kitagawa. There we go. That's close anyway. But
you were closer than anybody else has gotten when bringing them up.
Uh-oh. Hold on. I'm a real...
Isaac's going to take his turn here.
Haruo Nakajima and Tsutomu Kitagawa.
He's studying Japanese, by the way.
Just, oh, wow.
So, that's awesome.
But these guys, now you might not recognize their name and, like, again, have a hard time pronouncing it, but they're the Godzillas. These are guys that were in the rubber suits. Haruo was the one in the original Godzilla, and Tsutomu, he was the one in the Godzilla 2000. I mean, how cool is that? The original.
Oh, I think it's super cool.
Yeah. Amazing. I don't know. I mean, what was it, 59 when the first Godzilla movie came out?
Something like that. Sounds about right. I mean, I know Haruo now is like almost 90.
Oh, my gosh. So, I mean, these guys, I mean, that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to meet these guys. Are they bringing their rubber suits?
You know, unfortunately, they're not.
Darn.
But that would be – yeah, I think we're working on something cool for that photo op, too, because
cool.
It's – you know, like you said, it's kind of a once in a lifetime thing. They don't really do too many stateside appearances, and we want to really make it special. That's probably one of the guests. Haruo is one of the guests I'm probably most excited about this year.
Yeah, that one, it grabbed my attention when you guys first posted that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to go, because I mean, I'm a huge Godzilla fan. And again, we knew it was somebody in a rubber suit. We didn't care. You know, it was so cool. And then to meet the guy that was in that rubber suit, bringing him to life, making me not care that it was a rubber suit, I got to meet this guy. So, but yeah, you got a double whammy with two Godzillas. And I think that's awesome, too. Again, photo op with those guys, that'll be phenomenal. Let's see here. Again, we mentioned CJ Graham and Steve Dash. Chris Owen. Now, I recognize his face. Of course, I know him from The Mist and American Pie, but wasn't he in some classic TV or movie? But anyway, he's from The Mist and American Pie, so he's got that horror movie look. Some of these guys, I can tell why they were picked as actors in horror movies, because they have that look. And it's nothing bad. It's not a bad thing. It's just that guy's a villain, or that guy would be great.
It gets you work.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you got some folks from Day of the Dead as well, Night of the Living Dead. Against more other folks from Friday the 13th. We got Adrian King from Friday the 13th, Larry Zerner from Friday the 13th, Part 3. Adrian was in 1 and 2. Oh, yeah, I remember her. So you got, I mean, great celebrities, great time for any horror fan anywhere. And kind of a reunion of Dawn of the Dead, too. You got four actors from that. And you got two of my favorites, Sid Haig and Bill Moseley from House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. Those guys, they were there last year, I believe. Yeah, last year they were there. And Sid Haig, just one of the nicest guys to talk to. I mean, he could put on the character when he wants to, but oh my gosh, it was just amazing. I was ready to be frightened by the guy, but really nice guy to talk to. And again, House of a Thousand Corpses, Devil's Rejects, little Rob Zombie movie action. Gotta love that. So now, I wanted to bring this up. We brought it up last year, and you explained it very well. And I've been watching other conventions around the world and seeing how that really makes sense, is that you've got some wrestlers coming in. And the first the first wrestler you got coming in is Sting. Okay, and apparently he's going to be in costume on Saturday, the full makeup and everything. And I can see him because, that's kind of a scary wrestler. But we talked about this last year, is that they attract a lot of people. And it's a huge audience. And it's nice to have that crossover. And, in fact, I was talking today to a guy that I work with, and I was telling him about, I was going to interview you tonight. And he goes, well, who all is going to be there? And I told him, and I started listening to the wrestlers because I knew he was a wrestling fan. He goes, oh, my gosh, where can I get tickets? So and just the wrestling alone got him to come up there. Now he's going to find out all the horror world, and he's going to, maybe he'll become a George Romero fan while he's there. So, but, yeah, I see what you've got, like I said, Sting. You got Lita, a female wrestler. I love – you always have to have those. You got Kevin Thorne and there's one more.
Charles Wright.
Charles Wright. There we go. Papa Shango and the Godfather. I guess he's going to be in different costumes different days. Yeah,
he'll be doing the Godfather on Friday, and then he'll be doing the Papa Shango character on Saturday.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. It's you're almost getting like two guests for the – it's almost like a happy hour.
Yeah.
Him, you get two guests for one.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like – it's amazing that – I mean, again, now the Papa Shango, I can see that one because it's kind of a voodoo doctor theme with his character on that one. So I can see that one at a horror convention every single day. So, I'm saying these making more and more sense. I mean, you explained it last year. I accepted it, and it makes more and more sense every day. How's the world respond whenever they see wrestlers?
We always get a handful of people that, just have to trip over themselves to, point out that they're not from horror movies or whatever. Right. But you know what? It's kind of cool to see more and more fans almost sort of answering back before we even have to.
Okay.
Kind of just like, hey, we like horror. We also like wrestling. And it's kind of – I made a video last year for Shawn Michaels' line where I kind of just went through and I just videotaped it from beginning to end. And, I mean, the video is like 6 or 7 minutes long of me just walking this line.
I remember that.
And aside from just pointing out that, like, hey, these wrestlers have a big draw, if you look at the line, the majority of the people in the line have, like, horror movie shirts.
Right.
So, it's not just, like, people that are into wrestling that are only coming for those guests. And, there certainly is quite a few of those. And from a business standpoint, it makes sense to dabble in other areas just to, stay relevant. But, a lot of the horror fans are also fans of wrestling. And, while it makes a lot of sense now to kind of have branched out and you see more and more conventions doing it, mm-hmm. From our very first show, we booked Roddy Piper, we booked we've been doing wrestlers since the first one and we always have two or three. And, that decision just came about where, when we sat around and just started kind of figuring out the kind of show we wanted to be, we decided very early on that we wanted to represent our interests. And that's one of them. We all grew up on heavy metal and, 80s WWF and horror movies. And so, every show we try to kind of have it be a little mishmash of everything. We've had Star Wars guests at our shows. We've had guests from, the world of comedy at our shows. And it's always predominantly horror.
Right.
But, there's other things that we dig too. And, I think we're very knowledgeable and cognizant of the kind of show that we are. And that's just, you know, we're just that show, you know?
Yeah, and I like it because, it's, I mean, the basis is horror, one of my favorites. And, I mean, you've got me hooked right there with George Romero, the king of, you know, zombie movies. And then you throw in these extras, it's like, you know what? I need to branch out anyway. There, okay, there's a wrestler. Or last year you had the voice of Roger Rabbit. Charles, oh, I can't think of his last name now. But anyway, you had him there, and I'm like, holy cow, that's cool.
But yeah, like, you know, not to get off of indie, but, you know, just as an example, we have, you know, the voice of Skeletor at our Louisville show.
I saw that.
You know, it makes sense for horror, kind of, I guess, you know, like if you really want to stretch it. But,
right.
You know, at the same time, like I can just as easily say that my very, like the first ever Christmas I remember involved me getting like a Castle Grayskull tent, you know, and like
yeah.
a bunch of figures. And that was me. And, you know, Rick's like, you know, he's one of my partners. He's always been a huge Masters of the Universe mark. So, you know, it's us just bringing our honest interests to the show. And people aren't going to dig all of it. But, you know, if we can get you to care about 75% of it, then yeah. that's pretty good.
Well, speaking of the Louisville show, I was going to pimp that out a little bit for you. But you got Jerry the King Lawler coming in for that one. That's awesome.
Wow.
That right there. Right there, I mean, it goes to show you. You know, that early wrestling days and me actually liking wrestling back then and loving horror, it's like, yeah, you can see there's great crossover in the audience. But, yeah, this voice of Skeletor, I saw that, and I'm like, oh, man, that would be so cool. I wish Louisville was closer.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, once again, Adolfo Dorda, Days of the Dead, Indianapolis, June 30th through July 2nd. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. There's all sorts of stuff going on, guys. The vendors alone is worth going to. I mean, when I went last year, just walking around all the vendor booths was just some of the coolest stuff ever. There's a guy that makes replica Freddy gloves and Phantasm spheres and just great. I mean, these things are hard, you know, metal. He makes them. They're real. And then the guy, Scare Bears, the guy that makes those Scare Bears. Have you seen those?
Those are so cool.
Aren't they? Where they rip the face off? So, yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. So vendors alone is worth it. But coming in, get your chance. First of all, like I said, meet George Romero right there. And then all the other cool people. I mean, Haruo, the Godzilla man. That's going to be awesome. So what else you got to talk about the Days of the Dead coming up in Indianapolis? Anything that we need to get out there that I missed?
No, just, you know, just want to invite anybody who maybe is listening and has always been on the fence about whether or not attending a horror convention is for them, just to let them know to come out and give us a chance. I mean, you know, check out the show. It's our, it's our seventh show.
Holy
in Indianapolis.
Cow. Holy cow.
We've been doing it since 2011. Yeah, and I mean, each one kind of just grows over the one before it, and it's a big party. We've got film screenings. We've got, you know, a costume contest. We've got a tattoo contest. We've got live music on Friday and Saturday. I mean, there's tons of stuff to do. Whatever day you decide to show up, or if you want to make it a weekend adventure,
yeah.
You know, there's just so much going on, and there's definitely something for everybody. So come on out, check us out, bring the family, carpool with a couple of friends, and, you know, have a fun weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely you'd be surprised. A horror convention, at first you think, oh, no, that's going to be a bunch. No, it's awesome. It really is awesome. It's a lot of fun. All the fans, you know, you get in there and hang out with all the fans, find out how much alike you are, you know, you all are, and have these – it's funny to have an intelligent conversation about, let's say, Return of the Living Dead, one of the silliest movies made. But I had it last year. I had a conversation with a guy. We're talking about that, and it's social merits.
I think the best part of the, you know, these shows, and it's sort of like the part that I always talk about the most, and I try to highlight is just the social.
Yeah.
Aspect of it and how interesting it is to, you can walk the hall or you can just stand in any line, mm-hmm. and you're going to see 10 completely different people one after the other. You know, you're going to see you'll have your token teenager with the black shirt on and,
yeah.
and the weird haircut. And then you're going to see like a soccer mom right behind him. And
yeah.
then you're going to see a guy who's you know, a tax accountant by day right behind him. And then you're going to see a family, you know, of four bringing their kids and showing them something that they love, you know, and kind of, you know, indoctrinating them into it. So it's such a wide variety of people, and they're there because they may not have a lot in common outside of the show, but when they're at the show, they're all about that. They're all about, you know, we all love this, and it's such a great vibe. It's, you know, it's one of those things that's really hard to explain to somebody unless they're there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's incredible.
Well, just, you know, and the thing is, like, you know, for people like us that have grown up cherishing this stuff all of our life, we definitely remember when it wasn't, when the things that we're into weren't as mainstream as they are now, right?
Right.
And, you know, a lot of that explosion has come with, you know, all the vast amounts of online resources, and you have, you know, all the different stars have websites, and you can get connections to them, and you can connect to other fans online, whatever. But there's just nothing like being in a room with thousands of other people.
Yeah.
Who, like you were saying, Gil, who are totally different from who you are, but you realize that this speaks to all of you. There's something about it that gets to all of you. And it may not even be the same one thing that gets to all of you, but that feeling of togetherness, and that feeling that you're not alone, and that this is something universal, this is something that reaches all kinds of people and not just me, that's really valuable in this age when it's so much easier to just kind of plug in and observe everything from behind the keyboard, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I really encourage people to go to events like this. Yeah. I just think, you know, the passion that you feel when you go, it's a wonderful thing.
Just to piggyback off that, I mean, I remember growing up, I'm a child of the 80s, and mm-hmm. and as much as that was sort of the era when Freddie and Jason were, you know, taking over the Cineplex,
yeah.
it was still kind of seen as lowbrow,
yeah.
you know, to be
yeah.
into that kind of stuff. And, you know, now I'm 36 years old, and, you know, most of the relationships I treasure most I've made through not just my show, but going to other similar shows and meeting people. I mean, I've met my fiance at one of our shows.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's, yeah, at our very first one, actually. It, you know, I heard somebody once say that even the worst horror convention weekend is still better than most normal weekends.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree with that, because, you know, go to your day job and explain to them that you got to hang out somewhere where, like, half the people were in costume in July, and it was totally appropriate. And you talked about, you know, your favorite, you know, horror movies from whatever era, and everybody knew exactly what you were talking about, and everybody spoke the same language, and nobody fought about anything.
Right.
I mean, it's impossible, you know, especially in this day and age where there seems to be more, I mean, maybe there really isn't, but there seems to sometimes be more reasons why people shouldn't get along than should. I don't know. I find it even more important than ever for people to kind of get together and at least have a weekend where they celebrate things that they mutually enjoy without any sort of restriction.
Yeah, definitely. So, and that's the one thing in this day and age, you kind of touched on this, is we're losing our social skills. You know, it's basically, you know, we're all online social media, but everybody is, you know, all they do is ridicule each other or you know, just be mean to each other. But you go to a convention like this, you're hanging out, everybody's loving it. That's what I love about conventions. Yeah.
Yeah.
you touched on it there, and it's great. It is June 30th through July 2nd at the Wyndham Indianapolis West. It's on the west side. It's over on the airport side of Indianapolis. It's great to hang out. So go on out. You can find me there. And I'm sure you're going to be. Now, this is something I was going to ask you about, because last year I left. We had to go to a concert during the afternoon or during the evening on that Saturday. And so we left a little bit early on Saturday. And I heard that Brian Posehn showed up just to attend the con.
Yeah, he actually had a show Friday night in Valparaiso,
yeah.
Lafayette, or one of those by there. I don't remember which one, but he heard about the show, came, hung out Friday night a little bit. I guess he got a room or either at a nearby hotel, or he got a room somewhere.
All right.
And then showed up Saturday afternoon around like 4 or 5 and was just kind of walking around hanging out, and he kicked it for much of the night.
Yeah, that's what I heard them like, what? Why'd I leave?
Yeah, that was pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean
we've had people from, I know there's a band, Hollywood Undead, that showed up one year. They were playing a show in Indy either that evening or the evening after, and they heard about it and they showed up. I mean, you never know who's going to just pop in.
Yeah. I mean, find out these guys are fans of horror just like you, even better.
Yeah.
Well, Adolfo, thanks again for joining us again. We had you last year. You're back on this year. I bet you we'll talk to you next time, too, because this is an ongoing thing that they just love, these horror conventions. They surprise me. I love comic book conventions, but the horror conventions, just something different. I love them. A friend of mine actually made me go to the first one, and after that I'm like, okay, I'm hooked. So go to the Days of the Dead, June 30th through July 2nd. Adolfo, thanks for joining us here on the Nerd Up Podcast. All right, well, let's talk about the next thing we have to talk about, and we never got a chance to before. We kind of hinted at it, but Eric and Tim Coker, you guys were on the podcast, but Isaac and I couldn't say anything because you guys hadn't seen it yet. Well, now you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy. Tim Mattson, you've seen Guardians. What'd you guys think? Tim Mattson, let's hear from you first. What'd you think of the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
It was more of the same, really, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I don't think it broke any kind of new ground.
Right.
Well, yeah, if it isn't broken.
But, yeah, it really is. If you really liked the first one, chances are great that you'll really like the second one as well.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, I don't know. I like it, but I don't think I loved it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when the first one is absolutely, it was this is awesome. I love this. Second one is like, well, yeah, it's good. They did great.
Yeah. I mean, it's just more, it's more of the same thing.
Yeah.
So,
and it worked. And like
Isaac
just
fine.
And like Isaac just said, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, because there's nothing to fix. However, I want to say this before we get Tim Coker's view. I kind of was upset with what they did with Drax. They took him from this guy that was, couldn't understand metaphors, and then turned him into like almost a prankster. And I kind of was disturbed by that. It's like, oh gosh, you should have left him like he was.
I don't know. I mean, he was a one joke character in the first one, and he was a one joke character in the second one. It's just a different joke.
I mean, it was good at what he did. I'm not going to, I mean, it was funny. It was great.
But I mean, I don't think it's really any different than the first one. It's just, he's telling it, the character is a different joke, is all.
Ah, I see. Yeah, I can see that. All right, Tim Coker, what do you think? What do you got to say about it?
You know, I've seen it twice. And the first time, I liked it probably better than Tim did, but I felt kind of similarly. But there were some things that stuck out to me that I felt really good about. Then on Sunday, Teresa and I were supposed to go see Wonder Woman, and that was at 10 o'clock, and we weren't out of the house in time. So by the time we had our breakfast, we couldn't make it for that, so we went into the 10:20 show, Guardians 2, which she hadn't seen. And this is really interesting, isn't it? I'm sorry, I don't even know why I'm telling you all this. But the fact was, I got to see it again, and with kind of my expectations settled, and I could just kind of sit there and focus on the movie, and I really enjoyed it. Like, I actually think the second time it was better. Like, I think what I'll do, because I'm so great at whining and complaining, is I'll do a different tack here, because I definitely agree with what you guys said, that it's more of the same. And you have that feeling of, oh, you guys like this, right? Well, here it is again, you know, where you've got Dancing Groot, Dancing Baby Groot, which they put in, like, first thing in the movie. Right. So I appreciated them getting that, you know, settled. Although, I don't know, they probably put it in again. But, you know, I think there were a lot of things where there was specific callback to the first movie that, you know, it's a little on the nose, I guess. But at the same time, I laughed. It was funny.
Right.
But seeing it the second time, I found a lot of things to appreciate. And number one is an absolutely inspired idea for an execution of a villain in the movie. I thought it was great. I thought that he was just miles beyond the kind of grunting, serious horror Ronan, the accuser. Like, honestly, I thought the character of Ronan, as I know him from the comics, has a lot of potential to be a funny character in his own way. But, you know, he was so kind of humorless and constipated in that movie. And and I thought that Kurt Russell, when I first heard he was going to be playing Star-Lord's dad, I couldn't believe how happy I was, not just because I love so many movies Kurt Russell was in, but just that inspired casting. And the way they tied in the song Brandy, like the way that old-timey radio, FM radio, rock songs are so important to these movies,
yeah.
And the way they actually made the content of that song Brandy so central to what this movie is about, I kind of thought was brilliant. I really did. And how, you know, when Kurt Russell is first laying that trip on Peter about how, you know, oh, that's a great song, I'll tell you, but we're the sailors. That's you and me, you know?
Right.
And he's just manipulating him. But yeah. And it's funny because, like, my wife, it's a song she always loved. And to her, she always felt sorry for the person the song's being sung to because the guy's being kind of a dick.
No, you're right, yeah.
So it was just really funny. The movie is really about that song and kind of refuting it. And the reveal when they show, like, him mating with all the other different kinds of creatures, and when you realize that the reason he wasn't on Earth is because he was checking on his stable all over the galaxy. Like, I just thought it was great. I thought that when Marvel does a good villain, it makes so much of a difference for me. And this one, to me, was up there with the best ones they've done.
Well, let me ask you this. In the comics, Star-Lord's dad is Jason.
Yeah.
And what do you think about them switching that up for this movie?
Yeah, I don't care.
Really?
I don't have a lot of baggage with Star-Lord. I mean, I've read some really fun comics, you know, in the more recent. Like, for me, Guardians of the Galaxy still means Vance Astro and Charlie 27 and Yondu, you know, the original team.
Yeah.
Because that's what I read as a kid, you know. So to me, there's nothing that amazing about his dad being a space king. You know, I mean, I enjoyed those stories, but I guess maybe it's because I'm an old school, you know, Kirby Marvel guy, but I've got a lot more heart for Ego the Living Planet than I do for Jason and Spartax. So I feel like, I'm happy with the change, and I think it made a good story.
Plus, if you're going to change one of the properties, I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy pretty much has the least amount of traction with people going to see these movies.
Right.
That's right. There's still a little baggage.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could absolutely dramatically change Iron Man or Captain America, but I guarantee you a lot more people are familiar with those comics than Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, even I did read a lot of comics, but I've never read any Guardians comics. Just never did. So it was all new to me.
Nice. Yeah, you got a point there. That out of all of them that they can change anything, that would be the one, and they did, and it turned out all right. I mean, I had no problems at all with them, but I saw online bickering, if you will, about people saying, oh, they ruined it. Jason of Spartax is the one that's his dad. What are they doing? And I'm like, I didn't care.
I don't know, man. Too many times fanboys get their panties in a bunch over changes without really stopping to ask themselves, is this a good story? Does this help tell a good story? Yeah. And if it does, then fuck it. I mean, it's not the Bible.
Right. There you go.
No.
And even that's been changed several times. So
I was going to say, even that's been edited. So, I mean, really, as long as you're telling me a good story, something that's compelling and entertaining and fun and something I'm enjoying, I don't care.
Right. Exactly. I'm with you. All right, Isaac, what'd you think of Guardians Volume 2?
I thought it was pretty good. It's like Tim Mattson said, it wasn't groundbreaking because that was kind of what the first movie did, is it introduced all this comic book humor that you see in all the Marvel films after Guardians. But it's like I said earlier, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. So they didn't fix it. They made it just as well as the first one was.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I was worried about the whole Gamora, Star-Lord, you know, Ross and Rachel thing, if they're going to make, but they didn't, and I'm so glad they didn't. Was there anything that stood out for you, Isaac?
Well, the only thing that really bothered me with the film, like Drax's character joke change didn't really bother me, but I didn't like that Groot was a baby the entire film. Yeah. I would have preferred it if he actually, like, went back to normal Groot sometime in the middle, or like if he was changing throughout the entire film would even be good, even if there was like not even a second of adult Groot.
Well, at the end he was an adolescent.
Yeah,
so.
But I don't know. I don't like how long it's taking him to reform.
Yeah.
Since, you know, in the comics, well, not just the comics, but also the Disney show, they show him that he changes pretty quickly.
Yeah, he rebuilds himself or regrows. So, yeah, you're right. That that was kind of, I don't know, they wanted to keep the cuteness, though, I think. And he was the cuteness through the film. So I think him and Drax were the ones that carried that film for me.
I thought you said Rocket carried it because of how good Rocket was throughout the entire film.
He was awesome. Yeah. But I think Drax and Groot were the ones that kind of, for me, it just kind of kept me interested in, through the whole thing. It's like, okay, what are they going to do next? Like I said, I didn't mind, you know, it's just weird that they changed the Drax character. I didn't not like it. I mean, I'm laughing out loud through some of those jokes and his actions. I just, it was interesting that they changed it a little bit.
I think pretty much what they did was they took Drax's character from the first movie and then they put that into Nebula. And that was her throughout the entire movie, pretty much.
Yeah, that you're right.
Yeah. All right. That gets to the other thing that I really liked about the movie, or that I appreciated about it, I guess, is I kind of liked all the character development that was going on. Like I felt like I came out of this with a better idea of who the role was, and I felt like, you know, he was filled in better, and you saw him kind of learn something. And I feel like all the characters, you kind of saw them evolving. I like that. I like that they weren't just stuck. I mean, there was a little bit of a Dr. Phil vibe to it sometimes, you know, with the scenes with Rocket and whatever. But I don't know. Like, I didn't mind them changing Drax because, to me, you know, at the end of the first movie, he's like metaphor. Like, he gets it.
Yeah.
So you get the idea. Yeah. To me, I felt like he's been running with it. Like, it's a new thing.
Yeah, good point.
So to me, I appreciated that. And I actually, the story with Nebula and Gamora, I was really surprised that I found myself getting kind of caught up in it, you know, about their relationship.
And right.
I got to credit Karen Gillan or whatever her name is, because she is nothing like Amy Pond in this role.
And yeah, right.
I really enjoyed her in this movie. I felt like she kind of had to just show up and be mean in the first one. And then in this one, she got the reward of actually having some acting she could do.
Yeah,
and I don't know. As you see them start to make peace with each other in the movie, I bought it and I liked it. So, I guess that's my take on it: is that it's a small. I didn't feel like it was just a kind of a rehash. I felt like they stayed really true to the first one, but they made a new entry that had rewards in it.
Yeah,
if you look at it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Overall, the general consensus is that you're building more character. And you know, finding out some more origins. But I tell you what, this movie, I fell in love with Mary Poppins. I mean, Yondu. That was
but right, that, even Yondu.
Yeah, it was his character throughout. I mean, although...
He may be your father, but he ain't your daddy.
Yeah, Yondu was so cool in this movie. I wanted him to join the Guardians and become, you know, oh, he's going to go on the ship everywhere they go now.
Right?
Yeah, spoilers. I'm not going to say it, but man.
Spoilers, that does not happen.
Yeah, I cried. I really did cry.
Speaking of character development, Yondu, that is another problem I had with the movie. The only other problem other than Baby Groot was like Yondu and Rocket. He's like, I'm you. And then they never expanded upon that. And then Yondu kicked the bucket.
Yeah. Oh, you gave it away.
it's Guardians. You should have seen it by now. It's way past opening weekend.
True that. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right, absolutely. It's like, yeah, they kind of touched on it, and it's like, oh, they'll bring that up in the next movie, but oh well. Because I'm ready to talk about this phenom that totally surprised me called Wonder Woman. A DC film finally correct. You know, they got it right. You didn't have a brooding superhero trying to figure out what, you know, solve all his personal problems. And why his mom's name Martha. No, you had a woman that was saying, hey, mankind needs saved. I'll do it. I don't have a problem. I'll do it. And that's a superhero. That's what they do. Finally, they got it right. So Wonder Woman, general consensus, you guys. Okay, Tim Matson, you haven't seen it, so we're going to try everything we can to keep from spoiling it. But Tim Coker and Isaac, general consensus, what did you think overall?
I got it.
Isaac?
It was a good movie. But I don't think it was like this amazing, groundbreaking, fantastic film. For DC, yeah, it was really groundbreaking because it was actually really good. But
I was going to say the bar is set pretty darn low.
Yeah.
It really is.
But that's the thing. Basic competence is like the sun coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing how quick everyone is to praise this movie. And I have a feeling that this isn't a great movie, that it's just a good movie.
Yeah, it's
but I, you know, having seen it, I don't know if that's the case.
I mean, I don't know. Feel free to form your own opinion when you watch it, but I thought it was a good movie, but I don't understand everybody saying this is one of the best superhero films of all time, because it's not. It really isn't.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, one of the best superhero films of all time is Winter Soldier. And then before that, the other Captain America movie, you've got the First Avenger. This has got a lot of feel like First Avenger. However, they did make this World War I rather than World War II. And I can see why they did that. And it actually turned out really good the way they did that. I mean, if they had done World War II, I mean, come on. We're tired of Nazis, you know? Nazis are overdone in these things. And that now it's just, you know, the Germans, but they're not Nazis yet. It was a good enemy to have and to create the basis on. And plus, it didn't seem like they copied off Captain America on that aspect. The thing that got me about the whole thing is that, first of all, it's seriously empowering for women out there, I think, to be able to see that hero for them. Or girls, young girls.
Yeah, they're actually able to see a good female lead. Right. Ghostbusters.
And it's right. I mean, it's something that, you know, people take your daughters to this movie, you know, that type of thing. They have a hero now, you know, so it's got that going for it. But the other thing that I loved about it is that it was charming. I mean, Chris Pine, I forgive him for those Star Trek movies now. He made my day in this movie. I've said, oh, Chris Pine, you're awesome now. So, all right. Well, Tim Coker, tell me what you thought. Give me a good full rundown without spoiling it for Tim Matson.
Good full rundown. Okay. Well, I think it's important to go in with realistic expectations. Is this the greatest superhero movie ever made? No. I did say that it's simple confidence feels like a miracle after the last two gut punches that they did. I'll say that I honestly, you know, there are moments in the movie that have stayed with me. And you know, some of it is, you know, is almost outside of the movie itself, and it becomes almost a meta commentary on the moral vision that DC has been putting in these movies today. You know, if you look at the central message of Batman v Superman, it was that good deeds are impossible to perform without horrific collateral damage.
Right.
You know, that unintended consequences will damn any good deed you try to do. And to me, that's a pretty depressing thing to put in a Superman movie. So this movie is so unabashedly heroic in its aspirations. And to me, that in itself is bold. You know, it's a clear step away from the moral vision of the first two movies. And I thought that Gal Gadot was very good in the role. It's a movie that, honestly, I could imagine taking one of my nieces to. I look forward to taking my wife to it, because it really is, you know, I feel like it's a big deal for women to find. And I think a lot of the ones I've talked to are very surprised by how emotionally affected they actually are watching the movie and actually seeing the usual balance of gender characters inverted in this movie from normal action movies. And I think it's something that we all take for granted, that this is what an action movie looks like. And it has a similar effect to when I watched Jessica Jones. And like three or four episodes in, I realized, oh, wow, okay, I see what they're doing here. They're deliberately inverting what genders normally populate, which roles. And this movie isn't quite as schematic as that was, but it does that, and it does it really deftly. And I think that the secret weapon it has, in a way, not just Chris Pine's, you know, bottomless well of charm that he's got, but the fact that the way the character is written, Chris Pine is always treated with respect. And what I'm going to say is, it's like, he's kind of like Scarlett Johansson in Captain America, The Winter Soldier, where he's there by your side the whole time. He is absolutely able to take care of himself. He's got his own ideas and he can run his own game. He's just not on her level, you know, entirely. And he clearly seems to be pretty delighted to have such a remarkable person to be with, you know, like. What I mean is that they never stoop to making him look bad or dumb or whatever. Like, it really is. To me, I was surprised that the movie had the moral vision and the kind of intellectual sophistication that it has in its way. And it's a great-looking movie. The costumes are incredible.
Oh, yes.
Really incredible. I thought that Dr. Poison, and I insist on calling her that, I loved her mask. And it was so creepy.
Yeah.
And it wasn't showy, but it was creepy. And then there's a scene at the end where you see her kind of in a different light. That's all I'm going to say. Mm. And it's so affecting. It's so human. And I don't know. I just, the dynamics between her and her boss, you know, were pretty interesting. Well, you know, and it's funny, too. I wanted, okay, this is a side trip. But, you know, General von Ludendorff was a real guy, you know, in history.
Right.
And I feel like, to a certain extent, this is kind of cultural vandalism to change von Ludendorff, who's, you know, one of the great generals of that era, into this kind of insane mad villain character. But I don't know why they don't just, you know, come up with Baron von Hinkelstein or something.
Right.
You know, come up with some like cod German name. That's just, I think that that's probably inevitable anytime you set an adventure story in and around real tragedy and real horror and real war. But so I shouldn't suddenly put my finger at this, but having sat through the Hardcore History podcast World War II story, which I think adds up to 20 hours, I'm not sure, 24 hours, something like that. It's really long. It's phenomenal, but Ludendorff's a big character in it. And so I just listened to that not too long ago. And so watching this movie, I'm like, oh, man, that poor guy. You know? But it's good. It's good. It's a great-looking movie.
And it's got David Thewlis in it.
Yeah. No, he's great. I you know what? It ended, and I was, A, disappointed that there wouldn't be an after-credit scene because I wanted a little more.
Yeah.
And, B, I wanted the next movie.
Yeah, exactly.
I walked out of the DC movie wanting the next one.
That's remarkable. I think it's also worth talking about that this is the most successful female-directed opening for a film. I mean, domestically, it made over $100 million in its opening weekend. And that's significant, you know, in a genre that is male-dominated and one in which Marvel just is seeming to go way out of their way to not feature the Black Widow. In a film or in a lot of their tie-in products. We have a female-led film shot by Patty Jenkins, a female director, and is having phenomenal success. You know, I think that's a great sign.
You know, that's the thing. I it was probably because of the female director that gave it this different view than any other DC movie, but absolutely right, Tim Coker, you know, walked out wanting to see more. Now, that gives me hope.
I would never have predicted that happening.
I know. So that gives me hope for the Justice League movie. I mean, I've seen the trailers, and the trailers, you know, they're now that Joss Whedon has kind of taken the rest of the story going on or whatever capacity he's going to be allowed. But
I guarantee you the Wonder Woman is an outlier, not a trend.
Oh, I hope not.
You're certainly, I think you have a really good chance of being right because it is still mainly a Zack Snyder joint, the Justice League movie.
Still,
maybe they got the memo. I don't know. We'll have to see. I don't think I'm going to hate it as much as Superman v. Batman.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that.
Is that even possible to hate anything that much?
It's got to be better. I mean, I'm sure it's better.
Couldn't be worse.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they'd have to work hard to make it a lot much worse. But
really,
I mean, it's already so tone deaf in its design, just from its very bare bones design, just to look at, it doesn't look like something I want to watch.
Yeah,
you know, let alone having it be in motion and having sound. I mean, just looking at it,
well, this is by no means
it doesn't look appealing at all.
It's by no means any salvation or anything, but in the trailers, if you look at whenever Bruce Wayne goes to see the dude as the Flash or whatever, Barry Allen, he's watching Rick and Morty on the TV. If you pause it, you can see Rick and Morty on the TV. So
that's funny.
And maybe a little bit of humor, possibly.
Please. Well, just from the trailer alone, you can see they've already got a whole lot more than BVS. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I give them that, but I mean, it's way more than including a few jokes. It's like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, put some color in the damn thing. I mean, it's just so dreary that...
Yeah.
I mean, even looking at it is depressing.
Yeah, that's the one thing about Wonder Woman. When the Themyscira, that whole island, that is one of the most beautiful. I played the game Injustice, Gods Among Us, and Isaac and I did. Love that game, and they're one of the battle,
the stages.
One of the stages is Themyscira, and you can battle there. And looking at that game, or looking at the movie, they did a great copy of it. I mean, it was like I was there, and I was ready to start hitting the you know, mm-hmm. the A and B button, start fighting.
All
but,
right.
But yeah, I mean, it's the beautiful the whole landscape, the everything about it. That was like one of the most, and it was colorful. You know.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
was one of the most yeah. beautiful on, parts.
On a related note, have you seen the Injustice 2, the sequel game?
I've seen parts of it. I'm very intrigued.
Holy cow!
Yeah.
That. They that's some beautiful facial animation
oh, yeah,
in that.
Yeah,
they've done some really amazing work in a fighting game.
Yeah,
you don't mm-hmm. normally really expect that top-notch kind of animation, but wow, it's really nice.
Well, even at the first Injustice had, I mean, it was nice, and the like you said, a fighting game. It's one of those, well, you know, like what, Tekken.
What, Tekken yeah. just now came out? Tekken 7?
Yeah, just, I mean, you got all these fighting games that are just side-by-side fighting.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's like yeah, yeah. It's like that, but there's more to it. And so I think, again, watching Wonder Woman, it brought out the colors that the video game brought for me. So, yeah, whenever I was sad about BVS, I'd go play Injustice. And it's like, okay, they're cool.
You must have played it a lot then.
Exactly.
It's a very sad movie.
All right, Isaac, give me a full rundown of what you thought of Wonder Woman.
I have to agree. Like, the first few seconds of it is just the island of
Themyscira.
Yeah, that. And just as soon as you as soon as you lay your eyes on it, it does look really nice. I was actually really impressed by it. Like, the first thing I thought into the movie, I was like, oh, cool, the trailers are over. Now it's time for this crap fest to be, oh, hey, look, it's colorful. It looks nice.
Yeah. It doesn't look like some shithole that you're like, I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
For 2 hours.
There were a few times where I was like, man, this is a long movie. But other than that, I thought it was actually, you know, really good. Ares. I really like Ares in it. And
David Thewlis.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm shh.
I already know. It's
okay,
fine.
Good. I was gonna say the Ares like 1-2 twist is that's a nice one.
Yeah, it's because of that actor doing that. He did a great job. So, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I was hoping for Ares throughout the entire movie, and they had Ares at the end because that's the only like Wonder Woman villain I knew because of Injustice.
Yeah.
And they had him at the end, and I was impressed.
Yeah,
so.
And that costume at the end, it looked so. Well, I want
like
to say
Ares.
Real, but it looked like Ares, yeah, from the comics.
Yeah, I thought it was a good movie overall.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, guys, this. Anybody watch the last season of Fargo?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
David Thewlis is the bad guy throughout that run. Man, he's just freaking nuts. It's just an awesome representation. And I saw that, and then I went and saw Wonder Woman. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Is he, you know, what is he? It's like, because I just saw him be a horrible bad guy. And now, you know, I saw him in this movie. I'm like, oh, cool. But yeah, I've come to respect that guy's work. He's got a lot of great stuff. He just does a great job. But if you get a chance, watch the last season of Fargo. Great story, and David Thewlis kind of just rocks it. I think so. All right,
well, I've been trying to power through Twin Peaks. That's what my TV has been.
That's it. I'll tell you what. There's no way that a man of your cinematic experience wouldn't be pretty sure that David Thewlis was Ares at about 5 seconds after he's introduced. It's just the cinematic language and all of it's pretty.
Yeah.
You know what? You can tell. You can just tell when somebody shows up.
Yeah.
Are they a friendly person or are they not? You know, and he's pretty obviously not, but he's acting friendly. So I'm just saying it's not a big spoiler.
Well, that's the thing with the. After just seeing him in Fargo, that's like. No, this guy, no. He's going to be bad.
I'm sure he's a really nice guy, but he's always sincere.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, I would say, folks, take your daughters to this. Take your nieces. Just, you know, finally, there's a hero out there. And DC actually put her out, so they did good.
Or take your sons and just have them see a good comic book movie.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
And
yeah,
a DC
yeah,
comic.
Yeah, right. That's the other thing. I think anybody would like it.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's a really good, just adventure movie.
Okay, let me tell you. My favorite scene in the whole movie, I've got to talk about this, is the no man's land. When they get to that part and the Germans are shooting across the no man's land, and they say, there's no way we can cross. We can't get across this because they're shooting. They've got all these guns, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, well, that's where the village is. You know, we got to do that. Well, no, we can't. There's bullets, you know. And then all of a sudden she just charges. She takes off her trench coat and has her shield, and she just takes over. And I'm like, holy! And she leads the charge. I mean, she's like sitting there taking all these bullets. It's just like, I mean, I was like, I wanted to jump up and go, yeah, you know, in the movie, in the theater.
Yeah, but
that's the only scene that disappoints.
She's got the power to do it, and she uses her powers the way she's supposed to. She doesn't have to have Lois tell her what she should do,
or
her mom, or dad from Krypton. Like, she knows what to do because she's a hero.
Yeah, exactly.
And for a change, you have a DC hero who is genuinely heroic and worth looking up to.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't like this scene because they missed the opportunity to say for Wonder Woman to say something like, "Well, you didn't say anything about it being no woman's land."
Good point.
They should have consulted you on script on that one. That was good.
Oh, my sides.
DC, hire me for jokes. I got plenty of one-liners.
Beat Zack Snyder any day, so
you can provide jokes and sick memes.
There you go. Well, movie well worth watching. I want to see it again. I mean, I'll tell you what, honestly, when I was watching it, I was sitting there going, okay, when's it going to get bad? They're going to take a turn here. And it just
isn't it sad that we just assume it's going to be terrible?
Yeah, and actually, I thought it kept getting better. And, you know, again, it's no Guardians Volume 1 or Captain America Winter Soldier, but it got better. It was like, holy cow, this is a good movie. So,
well, as soon as I'm done with the show currently and I have some actual free time, I will definitely be seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a must-see, I think, just to prove that DC can finally get one right, if no other reason.
How about it?
I'm really curious to hear what you think of it, Tim. I mean, I don't know if you like it as much as I did, but I think you should at least check it out. So.
I mean, I'm dying to like a DC film. I really want to go to see a DC film and come out being happy.
Well, you know,
or at least not like wanting to get sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who listens to our podcast has just got to think that I just have a real hate on for DC, and I really don't. I love DC characters. I've read tons of Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman comics, and I would love nothing more than to have some amazing DC films, but man, they're killing me.
Well, this is a step the other direction for you, so you'll see that. It may not be like the world's best, but holy cow, compared to any other DC, it is great.
Yeah, solid. I mean, like Tim said, I'm hoping for competence and better. So
yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, this movie is so at by the end of the movie, it was so well done that I kept looking for a Stan Lee cameo. But
that's
didn't happen.
Funny.
I enjoyed the Stan Lee cameo in Guardians, by the way.
Oh gosh, yeah. You know what? I think it wrapped up every single cameo ever. If you ask me.
Yeah.
Oh, in Guardians?
Yeah.
That was pretty...
The Watchers?
I have to say, most of the time, I dread Stan Lee's cameos. This one, I was really happy about.
Yeah.
It was really funny. Well, especially because they walk out on him. That's, like, the best part.
Yeah.
Yes.
Aww. Where are you going?
So sad.
Yeah, I agree. The Watchers share our opinions about his cameos.
By the way, speaking of which, the first time he made the cameo, you know, they're jumping through those little different galaxies or whatever you call it, the universes or whatever. Did you guys see World War Hulk or, you know, Hulk, the Planet Hulk? That is very quick, and I'm like, I want to see it again just to make sure that's what I saw. But it was Hulk in that battle armor that you see in the Thor movie. But, yeah, I'm like, oh, cool. But, again, I have to see it again to make sure that's what I saw because I'm pretty sure it's what I saw. I saw it in 3D, so I was watching a whole bunch of other stuff, too.
I'm actually rather excited about Thor and Hulk throwing down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's like a fun movie.
If you want to get technical, they did in Avengers. It was just one punch.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, an extended throwdown between the two of them. We're in a place where they can cut loose.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That's such a cute trailer, too. I know I'm from work. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do want a fight between the indestructible Kronk and Val Halen?
Val Halen, yeah.
Oh, totally. That's just right.
Yeah, good callback on that one, Isaac. Whoa, good referencing. Dennis Miller ain't got nothing on you.
Don't forget about Midge and Lori. Sorry, I couldn't resist. I love that.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that was great. Wow, brought me back. All right, so, okay, we can say that DC finally got one right compared to all the others.
Finally got one right.
Yeah, and Tim, you're gonna. I think you'll like it, and I know
I'm excited to see it. I genuinely am. I am a huge Wonder Woman fan. I've got a ridiculous number of Wonder Woman comic books in my collection, and so I'm I've always and forever will be in love with Linda Carter.
Yeah, well, in Supergirl, she's the president.
I know, that's pretty excellent, actually.
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of which, Supergirl, that series finale. You know what? Actually, Eric, instead of Supergirl, there's now another hero in the DC world, and Wonder Woman just took it. So, you know, finally we got another female superhero. So.
Yeah. Have you guys watched the last season of Samurai Jack?
Kind of. We've been a little bit through it, but the DVR doesn't like recording Samurai Jack episodes, so we're waiting for
curse,
the other
curse
ones.
Curse that DVR.
Yeah. It missed like two episodes, and it's like two of the middle ones, episode 5 and I think 7, was it? Something like that. And like, God dang it. So now, I think they're out fully recorded now. I checked it out last night. So.
Maybe.
But yeah, I mean, that's so cool.
I'm trying
That's really excellent. I have to say, it's some really... It's really great storytelling with using his animation style. It's really nice.
I got to say, I think it just kind of made me happy hearing this in an old Cartoon Network cartoon of Scaramouche saying,
"What a freak. Looked like a talking penis."
I love Scaramouche. I think he's fantastic.
He's great, babe.
He's the best, babe. Ba-ba-ba-da-boo.
Yeah. Oh man, it's all worth watching. Yeah, that's one thing. Cartoon Network. It's almost everything we got said on DVRs from the Adult Swim section of Cartoon Network.
See, I don't personally have a problem with Teen Titans Go, but I do have a problem with how much time it takes up of Cartoon Network when they've got all the other shows like We Bare Bears and Steven Universe and. There's a new one coming out called OKKO, which is written by one of the writers of Steven Universe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Another show I can be indifferent to.
Did you have one more thing, Isaac?
Oh, yeah. Since me and Tim Coker here, I'm going to ask the obligatory question. Have you seen Steven Universe yet? Have you been caught up?
I am just a few episodes behind, unfortunately.
What was the most recent one? Because...
Oh, I have to look it up. God, it's been like a couple of months. I got really busy, blah, 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 but, I think it was the one where the Ruby comes and pretends to be everybody's friend.
Oh
yeah, that's relatively recent. Other than the, like, most recent 5, I'd say that's pretty caught up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm really close. I haven't gotten those last few in, so I'm very sensitive.
One of these, I'm just going to say one of the most recent ones is, like, it's pretty, I don't know how to explain it, really, without, it takes a really big turn from what you'd expect for a Cartoon Network show, and one of the most recent ones.
Yeah,
It's not like Samurai Jack turn, because that's Adult Swim, but
you're right. It hit some heavy feels too. Yeah. So
I think that's why Samurai Jack or why Steven Universe is so beloved, though. I mean, it's so real about that stuff.
Oh yeah.
So
and the issues they approach are like things that need to be taught in this civilization these days, anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, people. More people need to watch Steven Universe.
Yes.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to bring an end to this episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. Well, once again, I want to thank Adolfo Dorta for joining us. Don't forget, if you're in Indianapolis at the end of June, June 30th through July 2nd, head on out to Days of the Dead convention, meet the legend George Romero, and I'm also going to him and the Godzilla guys. So those are going to be fun. And, of course, with Dee Snider. So, but anyway, head out for there. And let's see, if you're visiting our website, nerduppodcast.com, don't forget, buy our merchandise, you know, get those T-shirts with us on your emblazoned on your chest. It's like having a big red S, but cooler. You know, you can look good. And also, just all sorts of fun things to do on our website. So nerduppodcast.com. Like we say, well, first of all, I'm Gil T. Wilson. You can reach me on Twitter @GilWilson.
I'm Tim Coker, and I'm probably not really on Twitter, but I have a cool Instagram for my dogs. It's called Oak Bark, OAKBARK, and they're adorable. Sometimes Blaney dresses up as Thor.
Nice.
And I'm Tim, and you can find me on Twitter at Tim Gone Mad.
I'm Isaac. You can find me on Twitter at EvilBacon88. It's like evil, but with a B, not Beevil.
All right, and then, you know, that brings it into the podcast. Like we say at the end of every single episode, stay nerdy.
Nerd up.